Welcome to the Shipping Podcast, a multi-fandom podcast for the shipper in you. Hosted by Shirazade, your friendly mod, OTP shipper, and fandom old.
Hopefully, this episode finds you well. In many places, restrictions are being lifted, but we're still a long way away from normal. So maybe you won't mind that this week's episode turned out a bit longer and ramblier than normal. Because as it turns out, Derek pretty much discovered fandom. At least the kind of fandom we talk about here, which is active and transformative, while preparing to talk about the canon ship of Edward Elric and Winry Rockbell from Fullmetal Alchemist.
But what's a ship, you might ask? It's an abbreviation for relationship and can be used as a noun or verb. I ship Kirk / Spock, or my favorite ship is Spirk. Meaning, you would like to see Star Trek's Kirk and Spock as a couple, and are using one of the popular ship names, smushing their names together in a way that can be cutesy or cringy, depending on your point of view. This podcast will be zero judgment, 100% squee, as fans talk about their ships, why they ship them, and which fanworks might make you ship them too. At the end, each guest will nominate the next fan to talk about their OTP, that's one true pairing, i.e. they ship the love the most, creating a multi-ship, multi-fandom chain of interviews. Het, i.e. straight couples, / meaning same-sex pairings, fictional characters or real people. The only limit is the imagination. Sound like something you might enjoy? Please give it a listen and let me know what you think. The Shipping Cast is hosted on shippingcast.fandomish.net. That's fandom, ish.net, where you can find show notes and subscribe on various podcasting platforms. There's also a Tumblr at ShippingCast, a Twitter at Shipping_cast, or you can email me on theshippingcast@fandomish.net, where you could also send me a recorded voice message for inclusion in a future show. I'm very open to questions and opinions about the ships we talk about or shipping in general, so please get in touch. Because I've had to start paying for pro accounts for this podcast, I set up a Patreon on patreon.com/shippingcast, in addition to the Ko-fi and PayPal links that you can find on shippingcast.fandomish.net/support. Would you like me to record some episodes that cover more general aspects of fandom instead of being limited to ships? One of the Patreon perks is special episodes, and you can even vote on the topics. A note in advance. As mentioned before, this podcast is a judgment-free zone. My guests are here to share what they love, not to defend themselves. We ship and let ship here, and any flames, i.e. hateful messages, will be used to roast marshmallows, to use old-school fandom lingo. This expression dates me, I know. I'm actually 39 now, and have been writing fanfiction since I hit puberty. However, I only joined online fandom in 2001, which was also when I started writing fic in English. My native language is Swiss German, in case you were wondering, and I have the equivalent of an MA in Cultural Anthropology, Media Studies and German Literature. These days I work an admin job in the renewable energy sector, and I spend my free time consuming media in the form of books, movies, TV shows and podcasts. I find fandom fascinating, not just as a creative outlet in the form of writing, reading and gifting, but as a cultural phenomenon. I hope I'm not the only one who loves to hear people talk about their passions, and there are few things fans are more passionate about than their ships. The ship that we focus on in each episode is clearly stated in the title, so if you think that the ship will cause you distress or anger, please skip the episode. It's also quite likely that there'll be spoilers. So in the immortal words of River Song.
Spoilers.
As always when covering anime, I desperately needed a primer. But in addition to discovering the world of Edwin and Fullmetal Alchemist, Derek and I also take several detours, ranging from the role of anime growing up, over general fandom knowledge, to a historical discourse about World War I. Also, at one point Derek asked me about my own fandom history. If you're interested in that particular ramble, just listen past the end credits. But I promise, we also cover the actual topic of this podcast quite thoroughly. So let's dive right in.
I took a trip on a great big ship to a land across the sea. To a land across the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea.
Okay, so, hi Derek. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. We're recording this on Mother's Day. So shout out to all the moms out there.
Definitely.
Like from the past, by the time this is released.
Moms
deserve moms deserve praise all the time. So,
yeah, this could be a good reminder to do a follow-up from Mother's Day.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, what have you been up to today so far?
I've been prepping for this this podcast. I've been hitting the books.
Okay.
Doing some research. Which has been a really fun opportunity for me. I actually spent this last week kind of going back over the anime/manga that I wanted to talk about, which was a great opportunity because I haven't really revisited it in a while.
And now you got reminded why you love it so much.
That's exactly right. So I was really grateful to have a chance to do that.
Great. But before we go to like Full Metal Alchemist and the ship we're talking about today, why don't you like tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name's Derek. I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So I have, I guess, a pretty eclectic background. I would say technically I'm like a welder by trade right now.
Okay.
But, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of Pittsburgh. I was really into like math and science and like nerdy, geeky stuff. Really into anime in high school. It was like super formative for me. And then I got kind of inspired by the senses of like adventure and personal like quest for identity. And so that sent me a couple other places, like into St. Louis. And I did like disaster response work with AmeriCorps a year. And that got me plugged into wildfire fighting, which I did out west, like in California, before returning to Pittsburgh to start school, to like college at Pitt. And then I didn't end up finishing at Pitt. I kind of had some things come up that just it was not working out for me. And that's how I ended up welding. I kind of was like not in college. I have been working in restaurants and looking for something to I don't know, like a trade that I could latch onto. So since then I've gone from like kind of industrial commercial welding to like more artistic stuff, and blacksmithing. And recently I've taken up like woodworking as well. I actually just gave my mom her Mother's Day present was like a hanging ornament that I made out of wood. It's my first one actually. But
so she can display it the way she displayed all your drawings when you were in kindergarten.
That's exactly right. And the quality is about the same.
Oh, no, I'm sure it's not.
Yeah. I guess interest-wise, I've really been, like, in addition to anime and manga, we were just talking about this earlier before we started recording, like, reading books. Is a big passion of mine. And me and my girlfriend, who I'm living with at her house in the north side, and she has a library just like you. So we've sort of rekindled each other's like passion for reading books. And we've probably gone through about 3 or 4 since this quarantine has started.
That's an excellent use of time.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I gotta say.
But so fandom wise, what's your background?
So this is interesting for me. I'm very new to like fandom culture actually, and I would say that this podcast is my first like sincere foray into the world of fandom. Other than my friend Athena, who you interviewed last week. So me and her would in conversation, we would really get like excited and enthusiastic about different things. Athena in particular, about the Marvel universe, she made me more excited about Marvel than any other person. Like, if you want to be hyped up about Marvel, just talk to Ath. But yeah, so when she recommended me for this podcast, that was when I first, I'd be like, oh, okay, like, what is this? And so that's why I spent, like, you know, this whole week, I was, like, looking on fandom websites and, like, reading through, like, first turn. I was, like, it was, like, an assignment. I was, like, a college kid, like, cramming for a test. But so it's, wow. That, yeah, so I'm like, a super fresh. I'm, like, a probably the most greenhorn, wet behind the ears fan person. But I'm really intrigued so far. I found some stories I really liked, and the entire concept of shipping in general. Like, there's yeah. such a vast world beyond the canon of the series, yeah. Which is really nice that you can keep enjoying the story that you love so much. It'll, like, live on yeah. people's imaginations.
Yeah, but, like, aside from, you know, like, this kind of fan, which is, like, active and transformative. Mm-hmm. Like, you mentioned that you started out watching lots of anime and that it was really important to you growing up. Yeah, so what kind of shows and books and movies that you enjoy were important to you?
Let's see. So the first anime I ever watched was called Razephon. And it was a mecha anime, so, like, giant robots. Mm-hmm. It came recommended from my brother and I had a friend. My brother and I were both on the fencing team in high school. Mm-hmm. And we had this friend who was an amazing fencer. Like, me and Matt, my brother's name's Matt, we're, like, amateurs. And this dude, I just thought he was the coolest guy ever because he had been, like, fencing since he was, like, a kid and went to all the, like, national competitions and stuff like that. And he was a huge anime nerd. This was a show that he, like, recommended to us. And it's very, very derivative of Neon Genesis mm-hmm. Evangelion. Are you familiar with that?
This is the point which people who've been listening to this podcast a while yeah. know this about me. I don't know anime. I sincerely do not.
Okay,
when I was a teenager, I think the only ones that were on TV here was, like, I don't even know. It's like Pokemon or something. Now it's Sailor Moon. It was, yeah, Sailor Moon. And I felt I was too old for Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it was just not something that people watched, like, you know, like teenagers. That's something, it was something for kids.
You know, that
I'm a bit too old.
That totally makes, yeah, yeah.
Because obviously it became much more, you know, like, a thing that you do when you're a teenager, and there were a lot more variety and more, you know. But when I grew up, there was seriously nothing. The one which I didn't even know was an anime technically that I watched was Heidi.
Heidi? Never heard of that.
Yeah. There's a Japanese anime about Heidi. Which, you know, being a Swiss, you know, we watched that came on TV, but I didn't even know that that's technically an anime because it's Japanese. But yeah.
Who is
Heidi? So, I don't know. All I know about anime, I learned on this podcast. Seriously.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So, and we haven't talked about, what was that?
Neon Genesis Evangelion?
Yeah. I haven't had an episode about that, so I know nothing. And we haven't had an episode about Full Metal Alchemist, so I know nothing.
That's great.
And the only reason why I know what mechas are is uh-huh. because I watch Pacific Rim.
That's exactly right. Yeah, Pacific Rim is, like, the first, like, attempts at doing a live-action mecha anime.
Yeah. Because it's Guillermo del Toro's love letter to the genre, isn't it?
Exactly. I feel like a lot of people were watching that with anticipation to see how it translated. Which is interesting because there's something about the medium of anime that I think is really, really difficult to translate into a live action. Mm-hmm. film. There's something like surreal about the way that they can like they can express concepts and emotions, and it's the fact that like it's the fact that it's this other like that it's not like a real life thing. You know, it's like even if it's portraying a real life situation, it's through this lens that is like so clearly like, I guess stylized. And I think for that reason, any attempts that I've seen to like bring that into a live action version, even if like they hit the story exactly the same, like it loses its essence. And so I've yet to find a live action like version of an anime that that's resonated with me.
Okay. Do they do a lot of them?
They do. I mean, not too much makes it to mainstream, especially not the United States, but so like Ghost in the Shell
is an example of that
Scarlett Johansson movie. I actually didn't see it. Scarlett Johansson looks spot on like the character. There's a lot of controversy about her casting, which is also
Because I guess there's fewer there's you know not really a lot of main roles for Asian Asian American actors, and then you know and then it's like this Japanese like staple. And it goes I get that.
And it's very much a dilemma as well, because especially the older style animes, a lot of them were very like anglicized or like westernized in their features, right? So then if you're like a person trying to create like do a live action version, you have this like, okay, do I try to make them physically look like the character, or do I try to more truly represent the heritage and the culture that this is coming from? And you most of the time I guess can't really have both. But Death Note was another one that they made an Asian like film. I don't think it released in the United States. They've tried pretty poorly to do some Dragon Ball Z ones. It did not work out very well.
So mostly it's like the anime where like the magic lies.
I think so for sure. And it's so hard to put like my finger on what it is, but it's just like it's just the way that ideas can be represented, and it can go abstract so quickly and be so much more believable because you're just in that world, and you kind of lose that symbolism when you make it like a grounded in like the grit of reality.
We've done two episodes about Boku no Hero Academia, and so that's the one that I know most about. And it did strike me that it's like really fascinating concepts, you know. Very hard to kind of translate into like a like real world setting.
Right. I'm trying to think if there's other like, you know, mediums that it's difficult to like go across, but that's another topic.
Well, I guess comic book movies sometimes have to, you know, like before the whole MCU exploded. It seemed like, you know, there were the old Superman movies like with Christopher Reeve, but
Oh man, they did such a bad job before the MCU.
Oh, come on, Christopher Reeve, he's a classic.
You know what? I guess I shouldn't judge too quickly. I may have watched the original Superman movies, but I don't remember them at all.
And I loved Lois and Clark, the new adventures of Superman.
Well,
I love them, but that had nothing to do with the comics, you know, like, or very little to do with the comics. It's like their own little universe.
I'm thinking more of like the series of Batman movies before The Dark Knight came out.
Oh, come on, Michael Keaton.
I know. Michael Keaton's from Pittsburgh, and it's so campy there.
Yeah, but we do not talk about George Clooney.
Yeah, we should not. Isn't there one with Val Kilmer too? And he has he has little plastic, hard plastic nipples on his bat suit.
Oh God, yeah, no, it wasn't George Clooney. It was Val Kilmer, wasn't it? I don't know.
You know what, Val Kilmer's amazing in there. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that was, yeah, with the nipples on the suit, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I watched that one because that came out like in the mid-90s or something when I had a huge crush on Chris O'Donnell.
Yeah.
So I had to watch that one because he was Robin.
Is that the one where Robin, like Ivy tries to kiss Robin with the, I'm going to do some spoilers.
Something. I have no idea. It's like, it's been years. I've never rewatched it for good reason.
Yeah. That's probably really good.
So, yeah. But yeah, so yeah, comic book movies also not so easy. And I mean, today as well, like the DCEU has been hit or miss at best.
Yeah, I think part of it is that like the DCEU, I actually haven't watched a lot of their movies because none of them seem great, but like they seem to kind of like Marvel does such a good job because like they make their movies, they have like a comic book feel to them, you know? And I feel like DCU just tries to make a movie out of like a character from a comic book, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. It loses like the fun and playfulness, I guess.
Yeah, don't talk to me about Man of Steel. God, no. Just don't. I know there's people that defend it, and you know, every opinion is valid, but I never wanted to see Superman like that. Just no. Yeah. That's not who he is. I mean, I'm not even a comic book nerd.
Yeah.
But Superman is like my Superman and Wonder Woman are like my favorite DC superheroes. I never really knew Marvel people when I grew up, like, you know.
Yeah,
but I did know Superman and I did know Wonder Woman.
Totally.
So, yeah, but now of course it's all about MCU for me as well. Yeah. Me and Athena could probably
I bet. Oh my god.
But yeah, so you already mentioned that you never really did all that, like shipping and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, how did you end up on a shipping podcast?
That's a great question. 100% reason goes to Athena for being friends with her. And I guess her coming on your podcast and then being like, who do I know who would enjoy talking about this stuff as much as I do? And it was me. Go ahead.
So it was a little bit artificial. It was like, she was like, you need to find a ship to talk about. And you were like, a ship? What's a ship? Google.
Yes, literally that. I was like, how much time do I have to prepare for this? Okay, I'm in. I can do it. But she was.
So yes. Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so today we're talking, I guess it was easy, then like came probably easiest to get, take like an Endgame ship that actually exists in canon.
Yes, that was much easier once I emailed you with some of the things I was thinking about. And then I was like, okay, cool. Yep, definitely this one. This is like the most established. I was like brainstorming all the different like crossovers I could like imagine and like cool like ships that would be like neat. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, yeah, there's really only one of these that's like would be mainstream and like established. So
yeah, because then I was like, yeah, and I would like to have recommendations, and you're like, oh, I just made that one up. I don't know.
Recommendations are forthcoming upon there actually being content to recommend.
So yeah, so why don't we move to the actual like fandom and ship. And as always, because I really know nothing, I Googled them quickly so I would know if it's a boy and a girl or a boy and a boy or a girl and a girl.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know anything else. Please, let us know, like, what is Fullmetal Alchemist about and who are Edward and Winry?
Winry? Yeah? Yep. Yeah, I would love to. So I'll start with just the Full Metal Alchemist universe in general. So Full Metal Alchemist is an anime that's set in a world that's pretty like analogous to like post-industrial / imperial Europe. So they live in like a nation state that's very military centered. And the technologies is about similar, and the aesthetic, you know, it's kind of like steampunky in a way, which is pretty neat already. Like it's a cool world.
Yeah.
And then sort of like the divergence is that, this world is less of like a scientific technology based world. The science and technology is more based around this thing called alchemy, which is, it kind of has more of a, like mysterious kind of air to it. It's the science isn't quite as like straightforward, so alchemy is kind of like it's an ancient science, and typically it was made to kind of be a tool for the people, right? It was meant to like kind of like medicine, right? It's like this is like meant to help humanity and like alleviate suffering. But then in this world, it kind of has been corrupted by this military state. Alchemists are used as like military weapons almost. They're totally weaponized. And
oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's just like a little bit of the backdrop. And then into this world, we have our two characters, Edward and Alphonse Ulrich. So they're the sons of a mysterious and powerful alchemist named Hohenheim. He's a pretty stoic and mostly silent figure who often has a distant look in his eyes. He's pretty often absent from Edenau's childhood. And even when he's present, he's pretty withdrawn. And we don't really understand why. The only thing that we really know about him is that he has this tremendous love for their mother, whose name is Trisha. So Trisha is the main source of like affection and raising for Edenau. And at one point when they're young, their mother gets sick and she dies and it devastates them. And they're both, you know, being the sons of this brilliant alchemist, they're pretty precocious themselves and really gifted in the art. So they start, and they also have this, you know, childlike ambition, right? That like, they're going to do whatever it takes to get their mom back. So they end up committing what is considered the ultimate sin in alchemy, which is the attempt to, whenever you do like an alchemic procedure, it's called transmutation in the series. So they try to do human transmutation, which is like, you know, using alchemy on a human body to bring their mom back.
Yeah.
And it's a gruesome failure. It's one of the more like powerful images in the series is these two brothers trying to bring their mom back. And just failing.
How old are
miserably.
They?
They're like probably about 6 or 7 at this time. Like they're kids.
Oh, jeez. Okay. They're like kids. Yeah.
But they don't have a dad, right? Like they really don't have like good supervision for like how to grieve, you know? So they end up taking it on themselves. And there's this principle in alchemy called equivalent exchange where like every action you do, like it has to have a cost. Like everything you do has a cost from somewhere that's being used to it. So for the human transmutation, it ends up taking his full name's Alphonse, his soul, his body and soul get taken as like part of the exchange. And so Edward, he's the older brother and he realizes that his brother's gone. And so he does another transmutation and sacrifices his right arm and his left leg to this like mysterious kind of gate or truth figure that opens up when they do this human transmutation. And in order to get his brother's soul back from the other side, and he binds his brother's soul to this massive suit of armor. So then this is all kind of like the preamble for this series. So the two brothers then go on this quest to like get their original bodies back. And on this quest, you know, like they leave their hometown. They become state alchemists, where they're like the youngest state people to become state alchemists so they can get accesses to like resource and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that whole quest is kind of what takes them on this like path of A, getting their bodies back and redeeming themselves from their transgression. And in the process, they confront these like deeper secrets and corruptions that are at the heart of the nation itself, the military leadership, and like adult alchemists. Mm-hmm. So alongside that, I'll get into Winry now. So Winry is like their childhood friend. So she is like one of the closest people. She is the closest person in the series to Edward and Al. She lives with her grandmother in the same town that the boys grow up in. So she watches them lose their mother. And then she like sees what happens to them as they get like maimed by this human transmutation. And Alphonse loses his body, which is like super traumatic for him because it kind of gets into it in the series. Like he can't feel anything. He can't sleep. He can't like feel human contact or warmth. So he's kind of in this like, but it has advantages, right? Like he's a giant suit of armor. So he's pretty like invulnerable and like he has great endurance and stuff like that, but he just wants, he's just a kid who wants his body back. You know what I mean? So Winry is such an amazing character to me because she's the only person in all the characters that they meet who like understands the pain and suffering that the two boys have gone through like more than anyone and like shares it with them. And then she is pretty constantly like this support for Edward and Al, where she'll like keep them on their path and like motivate them when they're losing hope. And also she's an engineer, and there's this thing called automail, which is like it's like highly advanced prosthetic limbs. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Edward loses his arm and his leg, and she she makes a new leg and arm for him. And so she's like constantly like giving him the ability to like walk and like use his arms and stuff like that. Sorry, that was a mouthful.
Well, it's an entire world that you have to describe. So how long did the show run for?
Let's see. I think the manga, I think, went maybe like 6 years. I'm not entirely, because I went back and started reading it like after it was finished. But I think it was something like that. And then about halfway through the manga being made, a anime series got picked up. And then what frequently happens when like an anime series gets picked up before the manga is finished is about like halfway through the anime series, it deviates from the manga and like from the canon, because like the manga hasn't finished, but the TV needs to keep producing episodes. So
a bit like Game of Thrones.
Exactly like that. Yes. So after the original anime got finished and released, they remade another anime called Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. And that one is actually the canon based, like that's straight up true to the manga from start to finish. So that's kind of the pretty universally like recommended viewing for anyone who's curious about it. Definitely do the Brotherhood one. Mm-hmm. You'll get the truer story.
So that's the canon that we're talking about today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mostly.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I don't even know how the other one ends. I didn't.
Okay. So, so we already mentioned that that Winry is really important to Edward and Alphonse. Mm-hmm. So, is it always shown as like this potential romantic potential between her and Edward, or does that come later? Or?
There's definitely always romantic potential. It's pretty humorous because it's also like the kind of childish like avoidance of any sort of romantic inclinations for and so it actually goes through a kind of acute process where like through like reminiscing during this story, you see scenes where like Ed and Al when they both are like young children and still have their bodies, and they're just kids, right? Like playing, and they used to fight over which one of them was going to marry Winry when they got older, right? But then, like, as adolescents, as they kind of like grow up, and first of all, then like interacting with the opposite sex seems like the most horrendous and awkward thing possible.
Yeah, you see cooties.
Exactly. Yes. So you see this like tremendous avoidance, but there's still this bond, which is really beautiful, right? Like no matter how like avoidant and like, oh God, girls are disgusting, and like, and Winry being like, God, you guys are so stupid and annoying, like they always show up for each other. And they express like their concern and like, and love. And it comes through in spite of all that. And then, you know, throughout the show, I mean, Edward and Al, like they totally become men, right? It's definitely like a coming of age. And so does Winry. Winry becomes like a really strong woman. And, so you kind of see as they mature, like there's a couple moment. There's this one moment where like she's looking at Edward and Al walking away, and she's like, "Oh wow, like when did Ed's back get so broad?" Like, you know what I mean? and so that there starts to be like more of those kind of like awkward moments too, where like Edward and Winry will be like alone together, and they'll be like this kind of will they won't they kind of thing, because they obviously feel for each other, and then like 98% of the time, like, it ends with some sort of comical avoidance and like changing the subject. Yeah. You really have to hang in for a long time to get the gratification of the, of their story, but it's so sincere that it's totally worth it. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, when you started the manga or the anime, was there like a moment when you were like, oh yeah, I would really like it if those two got their their shit together?
Oh yeah, definitely. One of my favorite moments between the two of them, and this is pretty like representative and of their relationship. So Winry, a little background on her. Her parents were killed in a civil war. So that's another bond that they have, like they're both kind of orphans. So Winry's parents were doctors, and they went like into this like war area to heal people. And in the process they got killed. So she has kind of this background of being like the healer, whereas Edward and Al are kind of like these fighters. And at one point in the show, she confronts the man who killed her parents, and she has his gun, and she's gonna like, you know, she has it on him, and she's like trying to, you know, get up the, she's in between shooting and not shooting, and Edward like steps in between and like pushes the gun down, and she starts crying, and she's like, why won't you let me do it, like why can't I do it? And the symbolism, like, or I guess like the imagery is really cool too, because he's doing this with his like metal arm that she made for him. And he's like peeling her fingers off of the pistol. And he's like, listen, like you gave me like this arm and leg to stand on. Like your parents saved people's lives. Your hands aren't for killing. They're hands that save people's lives.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then she kind of like has this breakdown, but, it's cool because like no one else would understand Winry like that, you know, and that's what's so cool about their dynamic.
Yeah. So we have a couple of my very favorite tropes: childhood friends, ride or die.
Yes, definitely. Like...
and lots of competence. I dig that.
Definitely lots of confidence. Yes. And, you know, while Ed and Al are like progressing in their like quest with like alchemy and stuff like that, she's getting better and better as a mechanic. So her growth is also like very trackable.
So, do you have any other like favorite moments?
Let's see. I do. This one's going to be maybe a bit of a spoiler. Are spoilers okay on this?
We're fully spoiled. We are fully spoiled.
Okay, great. So yeah, my favorite moment is at the end of the series when they finally like kind of express their love for each other, and it's still in a somewhat awkward way. you know, Edward, he kind of being an alchemist makes her an offer of like equivalent exchange. And he's like, he's about to like get on this train to go leave to do some other stuff. And he's like, listen, I'll give you half of my life for half of your life. And she like looks at him, and then she has this like realization that it's like, okay, well, this is how Edward expresses his feelings. So this is about as good as it's going to get. But then, you know, she goes like half, like, I'll give you all of it. And it's just cool. Kind of like finally like, that thing that's been there since day one, like gets named and comes down and, you know, and then they embrace. And then it's funny too, because then she like starts backtracking. She's like, well, maybe like 80%, 90%. Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, it would be strange if they were suddenly different people. They have to stay in character.
Exactly.
So that's how the show ends then, with the two of them basically, I don't know, getting married or something?
Yeah, so that's kind of like the epilogue, I would say. You know, that's not so much like the you know, like the after the resolution of all the like, you know, conflict and fighting and stuff like that. And you said we're fully spoiling on this, so full spoiler here. Ed and Al get their bodies back. And so Edward, and so Edward's like kind of like he's complete as a person. I think the imagery is like so perfect that like when he like becomes a complete person again, like he's finally able to like enter this relationship with somebody else. And I'm not sure if this is canon or not. Actually, the manga ends here, but it seems pretty accepted. Maybe it's just in the fandom world, but that Edward and Winry like have a family and have like two kids of their own. So, yeah.
I wonder if fandom also kind of explores the whole like amputation angle, just because, you know, coming from the MCU, there's lots and lots of like fic about Bucky being an amputee.
Oh, no kidding. Wait, who's Bucky again? Remind me.
Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
That's the best movie. The Winter Soldier. Yeah.
Oh, cool. It's I'll like, have to watch it then.
It's like objectively speaking, a really good movie.
Oh, amazing.
It's like, you know, like bit like a political thriller. It's really cool. And it has Cap in it, and Keith, my favorite. it's the second Captain America movie. Yeah.
That sounds
familiar. Bucky Barnes, he lost an arm. Okay. And so he's got a metal arm.
Oh, cool. Like,
yeah, a bit like Edward.
Yeah, definitely a lot like Edward. Does it go into how he loses the arm?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, but if you're gonna watch The Winter Soldier, I'm not going to tell you.
Okay, I'll watch it. I promise. I'll watch it. With it
is, it's just it's just a movie. It's not very long, so.
Okay, cool. That sounds great.
But yeah. Anyway, so I was just wondering if might strike me as something that fandom, you know, as something that I like about fandom, where they can explore like issues that are not really addressed in canon.
For sure, absolutely.
But yeah, so you said you kind of had to see like what the whole fandom thing is about. What did you find about Edward Winry and Full Metal Alchemist fandom?
Well, I found that people write a lot about, like, I'm serious. I read, like, some of the things were, like, 150,000 words. Like, people were writing novellas
Yep.
About
that's
this.
Not it a novella, that's a novel.
I was like, good. but some of them were really like were so effective. And one of the things I really liked is when they'll take like a different entirely different like lens of looking at a relationship. So, you know, one of my recommendations was a sort of novel length one called Stand Up and Walk Forward. And it's a very it's a more, I guess, like novel, like literary kind of look at the dynamic between Edward and Winry, right? So like the avoidance and the the emotion that's there. So like they kind of act and talk more like people in our world, like real people, mm-hmm. than anime people. You know, it's not so much like jokes and like, you know, the animation changing to something goofy and being like, ah, Baka, you're so stupid and like annoying, but like being like, wow, like why can't I say the things that I want to say to like this person? Mm-hmm. And then this person being like, oh my god, like he always pushes me away, but like I'm so lonely and I just like will put up with it just because I don't want him to leave. So that was one of the things I found. Another thing that I found that really interesting, surprised me kind of, was that Edward Winry was not the most popular shipping in this series.
Yeah. I assume the most popular, let me just put a wild guess. Yes. The most popular one is a slash ship.
Ooh, tell me what a slash ship is.
Two guys. Yeah. I know my fan peeps. I know. Yep.
Yep. You're spot on. so that was mostly what came up. So it took a little bit more digging to find the Edward Winry ones. Let's see.
So did you notice? Is it mostly like canon based? Or are there lots of alternate universes?
Lots of alternate universes.
Like, I don't know, run a coffee shop or...
Yeah. One of the most bizarre ones was where Edward and his dad, Hohenheim, end up being transported to our world, into like Nazi Germany. And then like the Nazis are trying to like capture Ed and brainwash him to put him under their control to use him as a weapon. And the whole story is about him like getting back to his world and like reuniting with Winry. So that one was pretty out there.
You have no idea.
Yeah, I feel like I'm just getting started. I also, you know, maybe it's going along with the wholesome nature of their relationship, but most of the stuff that I encountered was like K to teen. There wasn't a lot of mature or explicit fandoms. I'm sure they're out there. I didn't end up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, which I think would be really cool. I mean, one of the pictures I like is like a little bit more of a like racy one, but it's pretty hot.
I mean, it's, you know, like the fans. Some of the fans are, you know, consuming it. The show, they're grown-ups and they will have grown-up feelings
for sure, and it's really cool to see that like expression of it. I guess that's what I like so much about the whole fandom universe. It's that it's like almost infinite expressions of these two character dynamics, and it can be like super playful and like childish, it can be like super psychological and like dark, or it can be like really adult and mature and like sexual.
Yeah. Or you can just put them into Hogwarts. Every fandom has a Harry Potter AU. Every fandom has a coffee shop AU. Every fandom has, it's like, and there was only one bed where they have to share a bed for some reason, or where they have to pretend to be in a relationship, fake relationships.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There's tropes that you will find in every fandom.
I'm sure some of them are a little bit more convincingly pulled off than others.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Of course. But everything's like, you know, someone was like, oh, I wonder what would happen if, and then. yeah.
One of the things that searching around in the fandom universe reunited me with was this form called anime music video. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. AMV.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, I used to love AMVs when I was like, in college, like high school, I would just like,
mm-hmm.
And anyway, I hadn't looked at stuff in a while, but there's some good Edwin AMVs.
Yeah. Is that the ship name? Edwin.
Yes. Yep. Edwin.
Yeah.
and which I learned about ship names and how they combine.
Yep. Some of them are more unfortunate than others. Edwin is quite a nice one.
I think it sounds nice. Yeah, Edwin's like almost like an actual name. What are some unfortunate ones that you can remember?
Oh, I refuse to call Kirk and Spock Spurk.
Oh, that's terrible.
Refuse.
Wow.
That's a horrible, horrible name. That's like the one that I'm just like, nope,
yeah.
Never, ever.
Especially since the alternate would be Cock. And
no, how could you pass that one out? Or Spork. It's like, no. No, you can't. It's just like, also they're like the OG. They're the original, like the one that kind of started the whole like modern fandom,
mm-hmm.
You know, like with fan fiction and fanzines and letter campaigns to get the show, to keep the show running. And that was Kirk and Spock. And from that, we get the word slash from Kirk slash Spock.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, because when people wrote them as a romantic couple, they would write Kirk slash Spock, and then you would know what you were in for.
Wow.
And then it kind of was like slash just became the catch-all phrase for all male
mm-hmm.
Ships. But yeah, so it kind of goes against like my personal. I'm like, you know, there's a whole history behind Kirk slash Spock. I don't want to turn it into something slightly ridiculous sounding.
Yeah.
Spock.
Yeah, especially not this.
Sorry, I have opinions, I have feelings. But of course, if people want to call them Spurk, do go ahead. But if you ever catch me doing it, just kill me. Put me out of my misery.
So that reminds me of another character dynamic from Full Metal Alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
One mm-hmm. of the main characters and the other part of the slash ship is this guy named Roy Mustang, mm-hmm. who's like
that's a name.
Isn't that a name? he's a colonel in the military, and he's like, he wants to like reform the military from the inside. So he's like mm-hmm. trying to work his way up. One of his subordinates, who there's also a ship about him and this woman Risa Hawkeye,
mm-hmm.
Who's like a sniper. But
the names on this show are really all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're very like, they're very westernized, right? Like this is actually an anime that takes place in like a Western style civilization.
But even like Western style, you have Hohenheim, which is German. You have Mustang, which is American.
Yeah,
you have
like super Alphonse American, right?
As a first name, which is French.
Yep.
It's like,
yeah,
that's all over the place.
That's so true. And then you know, there's also like there's analogs to the Middle Eastern regions. There's analogs to like the Far East, as well. But
yeah, sorry, you were saying about this other lady.
Yeah, so she's like his kind of like bodyguard, like watches his back, and one of the tasks that he charges her with is like, listen, if I ever like stray from the path that I'm on, you know, or if I like mm-hmm. become corrupt or whatever, and I'm going to be like just another like military despot like we have right now, just kill me. You know, it's like, you have my permission, just like shoot me in the back. That just reminded me what you were saying mm-hmm. about Spurk.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know. Do you, Could you see yourself like creating content?
I could see mm-hmm. myself doing that, trying to do that for fun. I'm not. Mm-hmm. So I've probably like been exploring creative expression more in the last like year or two in my life than I ever mm-hmm. really have. And I haven't done much creative writing, but it's something that I felt like I have wanted to try, just along with, you know, like drawing and, like I say, like the woodworking and the metalwork stuff is more mm-hmm. what I do.
And drawing, you could also do fan art.
For sure. I love the fan art is really cool. People are so talented.
Yeah.
It's
like in every fandom, it's like seriously amazing.
For sure. For sure. There's a holiday for the Edwin relationship. And it was just last Sunday. It's 5:03. which is Edwin Day. And the reason is unclear, actually. mm-hmm. Why it's May 3rd. The most convincing reason that I saw for it is because there's a style of jeans from this brand called Edwin that's 503. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the fan community just took that and was like, all right, this is the day that we celebrate. So there's a lot of content out there right now in celebration of it.
Nice.
Yeah. It was funny. I was like,
that only works in America, though.
Oh, because otherwise it's like, it would be March 5th,
305.
Right? Yeah, 305.
Yeah.
Very true.
March 5th, or it would be, if it's the jeans, then it would be March, yeah. Because I think America is the only place where you do the weird runway around thing, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure. I have no idea how that started.
Yeah, but yeah, anyway, so you've been kind of dipping your toes into fandom waters.
I certainly have been, yeah. Yeah, it's been a good time to do it.
Yeah, and where did you do that? Like, which corner of the internet does one find the Edwin fandom?
So fanfiction.net was where I pretty much found everything mm-hmm. that I was looking at.
Okay.
At least mm-hmm. as far as, like, the fictions. Mm-hmm. And then for more of like the fan art stuff, there's stuff on Pinterest and Tumblr, people do like categories like that, and I just searched Edwin AMVs and found a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which was cool too, because I used to only just search for like an AMV based on like on an anime series, but not like revolving around a certain ship. Character, yeah, a ship or something like that, mm-hmm. and it's a really good expression of the mm-hmm. of the ship. I used to one of the reasons I loved the anime so much when I was in high school mm-hmm. is because it like emotionally resonated with me so much more than other mm-hmm. things. Like I don't know why, but seeing something in anime form, I would feel more emotion than like watching a movie or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's that seems to be the case for a lot of people. Like most of my podcast interview partners, they started out with anime in their teens. It's like seems to be the gateway, at least for many.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Oh, and also I remember when you were talking about like your experience with anime and mm-hmm. how it was like you when you were growing up and it was like mostly like kids shows.
Mm-hmm.
I can totally relate to that because that was sort of my like experience with anime, and then I started like it was creeping into I guess like pop culture or like mm-hmm. late night shows like Adult Swim started having mm-hmm. like more adult animes or on, and it was like this weird, it was such a bizarre concept to me when I first started watching anime. I was like, wait, aren't these like cartoon like kids, like how are cartoons gonna be like serious? And it was a big adjustment process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah
Yeah, one of the reasons why I'm not sure that I will ever get like into a real anime fandom is because usually I ship, and I ship hard, and I like my ships adult.
Yeah.
And a lot of animes, I mean, even if they're meant for, and I mean, I haven't been a teenager in a long, long time. I need them to be actual grown-ups.
God, totally.
And they all look like babies. They have the, you know, like the way they're drawn.
Yeah.
They all, even if they're supposed to be 25, they look about 12.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I can't imagine them having sex.
Yeah.
I
mean, in some cases, it's very inappropriate to imagine them having sex, right? When the characters are actually like 12 or 15 years old.
Yes, but even if they're grown up, because like I'm now currently in the Untamed fandom. And there's it's a Chinese wuxia drama, which is based on a boy's love web novel.
Okay.
So it's supposed to be gay. But because it's Chinese, they had to make the show not gay, but it's still very, very gay. Basically, it's the most romantic thing that you can see without them kissing.
Wow.
It's like, yeah, it's amazing. But yeah, but there's also like a Chinese, I keep forgetting it, which one, Donghua?
Okay.
Is, I think, and the manhwa. So there's a Chinese like anime and a Chinese manga. Mm-hmm. And I cannot get into either one of these because even the grown-ups look as if they're maybe 18, possibly. I just can't. I need actual grown-ups.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't have 30 thoughts about teenagers.
I totally get that. And you're right. I do feel like most content in anime is geared towards like the teen audience, you know?
Yeah.
Like Fullmetal Alchemist for sure.
I have less problems shipping like fictional teenagers on American TV shows because they're all played by 25-year-olds.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you can tell.
Yeah.
Like, I watched the first season of Riverdale,
mm-hmm.
and oh my god, they sexualize those teenagers,
wow.
like big air quotes, so hard. But you know, they can only get away with that because the actors are all like 21 and over.
For sure.
Like if that was like a British show, which had actual like teenagers as actors, that would have been so inappropriate. All those long shots to Archie's glistening muscles.
That would not
no
have been...
16-year-old ever had such a body. No.
Exactly. It would be a much different shot if it was actually a 16-year-old.
But yeah. Like... Anyway, that's one of the reasons why I have like I can never really get into like the shipping fandom side of animated series.
Yeah.
But that's just me. That's just me. I know a lot of people have no problem writing smut.
Yeah. You know, you just...
I wonder, did you go... Sorry.
I'll go after you.
Did you go on AO3 at all?
AO3? No, I did not. What's AO3?
Archive of Our Own. Because that, I think that might skew a little bit older.
Okay.
So if you were interested in maybe checking to see if there's some more mature or adult
cool.
Edwin Fick, that the Archive of Our Own might be
cool.
A good place to start, at least where I start always.
Yeah, I will check that. I actually did look at this site, but I ended up just going... kind of like rabbit hole down the other one, and so I didn't end up
I think a lot of like fanfiction.net is still very, very going very strong. It's like cool. Although you're not technically allowed to post adult fic on fanfiction.net,
that makes sense. Okay. I'll definitely look into those. That's cool.
Just saying.
I know. I'll have to, like, it's funny. I'm going to have to tread lightly on that. Because like I was saying, one of the things I like so much about this, like, ship is that it's probably, like, one of the most, like, straight up wholesome, like, just, like, you know, like, warm your heart kind of innocent childhood, like, relationship things. So, which does leave, like, it's very interesting to, like, start going into the ground of, like, sexuality from that, like, launching off point. But I'm definitely going to have to be careful to preserve my...
Well, that's the thing about AO3. People are usually pretty good about tagging and warning.
Cool. That's
so
great.
You know, all the fics, they have warnings. If there's, like, major character death or underage sex or whatever, there'll be a warning. Or or there will be a dude does not choose to use warnings. And then you know that it's up to you if you want to click on that. And there's usually tags that will tell you, you know, like, what it's about. If it's, like, if there's, like, I don't know, dubious consent or drunk or drugs or whatever.
Yeah.
Or if it's just, like, fluff. You will learn so many fandom terms.
I can't wait.
And, you know, and if you need to know what anything means, there's, there's fan lore, which is pretty good if you want to know what something means in fandom.
I'm amazed by the, the extent of the content that people produce on these.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I'm like the biggest fan of fandom. That's why I'm doing this podcast, you know. It's like, because I'm always blown away with, like, what's out there. So, do you have anything else that you want to say about, like, the fandom, the ship, before we move on to the recommendations?
I don't think so. I'll let you know if I think of something else, but I think we covered it pretty well. Yeah.
Okay, great. So what were the stories that, like, you that you noticed, like, right away?
Okay. So let me find my notes here. So the first one I read was called Stand Up and Walk Forward. That's a canon based Edwin story, and that's the one that I was talking about. That's, like, a more, like, adult kind of look at the dynamic of the Edward and Winry relationship, and it kind of has more, like, serious tones to it. There's more, like, real life things going on, like, you know, Winry's grandmother has died. They're, like, adults. She's just, like, in this house by herself. She's dealing with those kind of things. So it felt like a more, like taking the Edwin relationship dynamic and pulling it into, like, reality a bit. And I like the way that she wrote it as well. That's a longer one as well. The other one was more lighthearted, is called Past After the End. And it's another canon based, and it kind of takes place after the end of the series. And it's a lot more lighthearted. Chapters are, like, easier to read through. It's just pretty funny. It's just, like, a continuation of their dynamic. And if you enjoyed that dynamic, you'll enjoy, just kind of, it's like some fluff. And then alternate universe, the one is called The Waters of Laeth. That's where Ed and his dad, Hohenheim, end up in our world in Nazi Germany. And then have to go.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
And then they have to go. It's about, like, 70 chapters long. And there's some pretty cool scenes where, like, Ed gets, like, put underneath this, like, mind control drug, and then he starts, like, flashing back and forth between, like, his universe and like the like our world in his head, and, like, starts losing the distinction between the two. The only thing about that one I'll make a note of, it had the Edward Winry like tagged as one of the relationships, but they actually don't show up until like the very last chapters.
Yeah.
So it's a lot.
I guess they're separated.
Exactly.
For the most of it.
And it's like they're reuniting. And then the other one that I liked, an alternate universe one, is it's called the Ishvalan Accords. In the Full Metal Alchemist universe, Ishval is kind of like the region that represents the Middle East. So the main country that the story takes place in is called Amistris. And in the show, Amistris like goes on this. It's actually quite horrifying. It's really weird to encounter some of the themes of the show, because it's like we were talking about, it's very much meant for teens, but it's a straight up like it's a genocide campaign against these people of Ishval, which is kind of like it's very jarring, and it gets presented like they don't use the word genocide, right? They say like war of extermination, and like it's definitely depicted as horrible, but then like when you start thinking about like in actuality what you're reading, it's a lot more disturbing than I guess kind of like the way the animation makes it seem. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh dude, this is like a straight up like genocide of a people, that like yikes. And it's also an important backdrop for a lot of the characters in the story, because a lot of the adults in who Edward encounters, especially the state alchemists, so they're like veterans of that war. So like they're all like very, very like damaged people, because they have like taken part in this extermination campaign. And like, so they carry like this like guilt or trauma, or in reverse, they have just like completely cut off their connection to like their remorse and like conscience, because like they can't live with it, you know?
Makes me wonder if that's maybe a bit of a political commentary on, you know, like Japan's role in World War II.
Interesting. Yeah, wow.
Because just as, I know that that's not something that's very widely spoken of in Japan. They seem to, I don't know, not really, like especially like compared to like Germany or something. They don't seem to do a lot of like reflection on it. I just wonder if maybe it's kind of like a way to kind of deal, you know?
That's fascinating. Yeah. I would be really interested to like hear anyone who could speak about that. And in general, like how Japan has dealt with as like a nation, the, I guess their experiences from World War II, because
in school we had like, you know, in history we had like a whole year of World War II, but it was like almost everything was European theater, obviously, because you know we're right next to Germany.
Totally.
It's like, you know, we took a day trip to a concentration camp.
Wow. Oh my god.
But yeah, so in France, just across the border. But yeah, so it wasn't like a death camp, but it was a concentration camp. No two ways about it.
Wow.
But yeah, so we didn't really talk a whole lot about the Asian theater.
Yeah.
And then I went to Singapore on my way to Japan, actually. I spent a week in Singapore with a friend of mine. And that was when I learned that like the Second World War technically ended in Singapore. That's where the peace treaty with Japan was signed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I also learned a little bit of how like people in like China and Singapore and Korea, you know, how much more how they suffered on the like Japanese occupation. Which, you know, like I said, it was mentioned in school, but we definitely focus way more on the like the Nazi Germany angle of it all.
Yeah. I'm curious, did you on that same like line of question, like did you have an equal focus on World War I and World War II?
Or was God, it more, no.
No?
God, no. Okay. World War II, because the whole, obviously, you know, it's like horrifying, you know, with the whole genocide of the Jews and the death camps and everything. World War One, we mostly learned about as like a preliminary, like that set, mm-hmm. like the stage for the way Europe was post-World War One, set the stage for Hitler to get into power, you know, like Germany had to pay such big reparations and they felt like mm-hmm. really treated very badly.
For sure.
And brutally, as because they lost.
Yeah, which is absolutely true. And they, right?
Yeah. And I mean, they lost their monarchy. They were suddenly like a republic, the Weimar Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really new, you know, they didn't have a long history of like democracy or something to build on.
Wow.
And then it must have been, so we kind of learned more about like that, how the aftermath of World War One kind of led up to Hitler coming into power. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of how it is here too. There's a lot more emphasis on World War Two, but I feel like World War One does not get as much attention as it really should.
Well, I mean, it got like with the centennial. Mm-hmm. I feel like we got more, it got a bit more of a spotlight.
That makes sense. I didn't even think of that.
And Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman was also set in World War One.
Is it? I didn't know this. I gotta watch Wonder Woman now. Yeah. Dang, cool.
Yeah, Wonder Woman is pretty great.
Okay.
Like, especially the first part, which is set on Themyscira, the Amazon island.
Okay.
So many amazing women.
Cool. Yeah, I've heard good things about that. I haven't gotten around to watching it, but I'll have to make sure.
Yeah, and that's set in World War One as well. But sorry. Complete and total sidetrack. Which, I don't know. I should maybe change the tagline of my podcast to a fan podcast with some sidetracking.
Definitely.
Because it always happens.
I like the sidetracks whenever I listen to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me too.
Sure.
Me too. I rarely cut them out. I mostly leave them in.
Yeah.
And not just because I'm lazy, but because I also think it's, you know, interesting.
And in this case too, I mean, talking about like World War II, World War I Europe is actually pretty relevant to mm-hmm. to the story itself, because it is very much like a parallel to that kind of like era.
Yeah.
And history. Yeah, for sure. You know, the leader of the country is called the Führer King. Well, actually,
ooh,
I feel like they
could.
I feel like they actually couldn't decide on which title to give him. So he's referred to as either the Führer King, or the President. Like,
oh, okay.
<everything. laughs> Or maybe it was a translation issue.
No, I think the Japanese quite seem to like using German words.
Mm.
So it probably is the Führer. And
yeah.
Which I, you know, now I said it with like this American accent, which is so weird.
What's the, how would you pronounce it correctly?
It's der Führer.
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 Führer. I'm sorry, I'm speaking your language. Führer.
Yeah, it's you know, it's the U with the two little dots, the umlaut.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
cool.
There's some words that, you know, that have just kind of been, why should just English, you know, why should just Germany have like English loan words? English can have German loan words.
For sure.
Not?
For sure.
And we don't pronounce the English ones necessarily correctly. So, you know. Like in Germany, it's really funny. You know, a mobile phone?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's called a handy.
A handy? Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, so we steal English words. But yeah. So, sorry. We were talking about the Ischwalen Accords or
something.
That's
right. Yeah. So
How is that an AU?
So it is a Colonel Mustang travels to Ishval to set up like a peace, like an armistice between the Ishvalans and Amistris.
So it's set during that war of extermination.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
And so yeah, it's like instead of it being like just a massacre, it's it's like the nations coming to peace accords. But I like it because it features Colonel Mustang, who is he's one of the most popular characters, and I don't think it even ships Mustang and Ed in this. I think they kind of stick to their more like canon based relationship with each other.
Okay. So it's mostly a gen fic?
Ooh, what's a gen fic?
Gen as opposed to like het or slash, so it's focused not so much on the shipping than on like just like the story. The focus isn't on romance.
Yeah, yeah. There's Edward and Winry do feature in it, but it's more of like a general kind of fiction.
Obviously that's where gen fic comes from, Jesus. I could have just led with that.
Well, I mean, I still may ask for clarification just to make sure I was on the same page.
Yeah, no, you were completely on the right.
So that's going to, and the Ishvalans are they're a cool, like their their story and their region is it's a interesting part of the series when they go into it.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you found some good AMVs.
I did, yeah. One of them is Just a Dream. It's full. Let me see if there's a title on it. Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
I find it.
Okay, yeah. Edward X. Winry, Just a Dream.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is called FMA Edwin. And it's Perfect by Ed Sheeran. So one of them is like a little more like the Just a Dream one. I think it captures a little bit more like the emotionally intense version of the series. And in general, like the struggle that mostly, I guess, Ed, his struggle is more mostly the focus of the show. And then like how Winry is there to like kind of help heal him, and alternatively like when Winry's struggling, how Edward kind of comes in and like protects her or brings her back as well. And then the other one, the Ed Sheeran one, it has more more shots from like the end of the series when Edward's in his like full form, and it's a little more romancy.
Great. So I don't know, did you also find like fan art or something that you wanted to show off?
I did find some fan art. What's a good way, is there a way for me to, should I just describe it, is there a good way to share it with you, or should I link
just send me the link, so maybe to tell us what you liked about it.
Okay. So the one I'm looking at right now is, it's a little bit more of a, I wonder what the word for it would be when like the style gets a little bit away from anime and it becomes a little bit more like realistic. It's a realistic style, and it's called like Morning Light, and it's Edward and Rinri laying on a bed with kind of like golden light from the morning shining through their window, and she's laying flat on the bed, and they're both, so Edward is at least half naked, Winry's like in her underwear, and they're just kind of like blissfully like kissing each other. Yeah, it's nice, like the eyes are closed, it's very like serene. And you know, they
is there a kiss on the show?
No.
No.
Nope. The best you get is like the best you get is like words.
And a hug, I assume.
Yeah, you get that and a hug, exactly.
Yeah.
It's very meaningful though.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of feeling in that. But yeah, so there's a lot of like tenderness between the two of them, and you see Edward with his like hair down. I really love the picture. And gold is kind of like a pretty strong color for Fullmetal Alchemist. He's one of his distinguishing features is he has like these golden eyes. And then
that's so funny. That seems to be such a thing, like these weird colored eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the Untamed as well, one of them has golden eyes, the other one has gray eyes, which, you know, Asian people don't really have.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But at least it makes it easy to, you know, like pick them up. Like, oh yeah, just the one with the yellow eyes.
Sure. And the eyes are so big as well. So like they're such a strong feature. You kind of gotta give them distinction and character.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the first one, and the other one is just a it's like a family photo of Edward and Winry and their two kids and Alphonse with his body back and one of the other characters, this girl from like the East, her name's I forget her name, Ming, I think. But she kind of like has a crush on Alphonse. So it's just kind of like a happy family picture. And it's kind of a cool comparison to when so like throughout the show there's a picture of Edward and Al with their mom and dad, like Trisha and Hohenheim. And it's like the only picture of all of them together. And so it's kind of like a really sad looking picture throughout the show. Mm-hmm. Cause it's just like, oh wow, this is the only time that they were actually like a family together. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like super like fulfilling to see like that these brothers have like made their own family and are like experiencing that joy from that.
Oh, that's really nice. Yeah, definitely send me the links. I'll put everything in the show notes. Cool. So people can find it.
Will do, absolutely.
Great. So do you know who I will be talking to next?
I do, yeah. And it's my brother he's in Beijing, and he actually runs a sci-fi reading group in Beijing that has been like meeting over Zoom. So I've been meeting with them like on Zoom calls during quarantine, which has been really neat.
Oh, cool.
But so he's the one who's up next. So I'll give you his information.
Great. I'll be curious to see if he has if he has to research what fandom is as well.
he might be a little more familiar than me.
So can we find you online somewhere?
I'm actually very inactive on online, at least in terms of like a presence.
No Twitter, no Tumblr.
I have an Instagram, but I haven't been on it for ages.
Whatever you feel comfortable with. Okay. People will have like fandom Twitters or something, and then people can
totally make connect sense. With them. I wouldn't have anything that relevant to it, but it might be cool if anyone wants to like send something out or like connect in some way. It'd be cool to at least have an option for that.
Send you a list of recommendations.
Absolutely. Yeah, guide me on my forays into fandom. And give me some other recommendations.
But yeah, I think you did a very, very good job, like, you know, delving into fandom. It's like
thank you so much. I really love the opportunity to do it.
I had a very good time.
Thank you. Yeah, me as well.
Yeah, bye.
Okay, bye.
I took a trip on a great big ship to a land across the sea. To a land across the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea.
This wraps up the 34th episode of the Shipping Podcast. If you stuck with it for the entire lengthy discussion, I hope you had as good a time as I did. As I always say, I'm the biggest fan of fandom, so it was really great to talk to someone who has such fresh eyes as Derek. We also talked about many other things, among them part of my own fandom history and a particular Harry Potter fanfic. If you're interested, just keep listening after the end credits. If you want to check out the fanworks mentioned, go to the show notes on shippingcast.fandomish.net. That's fandomish.net. In episode 35, I'll be talking to Derek's brother Matt about an as-yet-to-be-specified ship. It will be publicly released on June 5th, earlier for Patreon supporters. Until then, stay safe and healthy, and let fandom help you stay sane.
You can follow and get in touch on Tumblr as ShippingCast, on Twitter as Shipping_cast, and you can email me on theshippingcast@fandomish.net. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think of the podcast and the ships we've been covering. You can find the podcast on all major and some minor podcasting platforms. A full list can be found on shippingcast.fandomish.net/subscribe. As mentioned before, if you want to get the next episode the moment I finish it, at least one day early, you can become a patron on patreon.com/shippingcast. This also has some other nice rewards, like extra episodes on other fandom topics. And that way you can help me pay for the necessary pro accounts for the podcast. Also, I'm hoping to one day be able to afford transcripts to make the podcast more accessible. There's also the option to send me a one-time donation on ko-fi.com/shirazade or via PayPal to webmistress@shirazade.net. All these options are also described on shippingcast.fandomish.net/support. And you can help me totally for free by leaving reviews or simply spreading the word to other fans. I'm Shirazade, spelled Shirasade, and you can find me as such on Tumblr, AO3, YouTube, Pillowfort, Dreamwidth, and on shirazade.net, although I'm not active on all of them. I've also joined Mastodon as shirazade@fandom.inc with a K. The podcast artwork was created by the wonderful Little Zion. The music is Sailor Song by the Peerless Quartet. Thanks so much for listening, and remember, you are the captain of your ship.
How did you get started with fandom yourself?
Well, I started with fandom before I knew that there was such a thing. I wrote, like, when I was like a teenager, I wrote like horribly embarrassing love stories about like thinly veiled versions of myself, which in fandom is called Mary Sue.
Okay.
Meeting and falling in love and hooking up with all the guys that I liked, like Mr. Spock. I was weird. Don't judge me. Mr. Spock or Sherlock Holmes. but also like Howie Darrow from the Backstreet Boys or Mark Owen from Take That. Yeah, and that dates me. I know.
God, I'm old. I'm right there with you. Don't worry.
But yeah, so it's like, you know, I'm talking Take That and Backstreet Boys, the original release, like, you know, like mid-90s. God. But yeah, so I wrote my own fic, like in notebooks by hand, cool. In German.
Wow.
And then I got my own laptop when I got to university.
I was going to say, that was pre-internet too.
Well, my dad had the internet. It was very slow and we couldn't talk on the phone when someone was on the internet. And it was my dad's computer. So it was really, I mean, I usually only used it to, I don't know, do homework or something. Mm-hmm. Because, it would have been weird. The concept of like deleting your browser history was not really something that I was familiar with.
Right, right.
But yeah, I got my own laptop when I got to university, and so I had my own internet. And then I was stuck at home because I had my first big depressive episode, and I was like, I mean, I've heard this thing about fan fiction because I was in this Star Trek fan club.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this thing about fan fiction, so I Googled, you know. And then I just never looked back. I was like, I discovered like first fanfiction.net and Yahoo groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I started talking to people on those like mailing lists. And I got really lucky. I found some really nice people. And I started writing in English and they were very nice about it and gave me feedback. And I was like, oh, cool. Nice. I found my people.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And yeah, that was 20 years ago. Oh my God. Yeah, so now I have like, I don't know, on AO3, I think I have like 500 posted. And several of these are like collections which have like, you probably don't know what a drabble is. It's like really short, like a snippet. It has to be a certain length.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of a writing, you set yourself like a writing challenge. Like, I'm going to tell a story in 100 words or 200 words.
Okay.
Yeah. So some of these are so technically speaking, I probably have way more than 500 or something.
Wow. That's
incredible. But yeah, it's what happens.
Aside from Kirk and Spock, what were some of your other favorite?
Oh, I haven't actually written a lot of Kirk and Spock. It's funny. I've kind of moved, like, I usually have like one big OTP,
uh-huh.
one true pairing that I like focus on. And I started out with like Star Trek, and then I quickly moved to, I was like, oh, I used to write fic about me and Howie Darrow. Let's see what other people write about Backstreet Boys. Mm-hmm. And then I discovered people were writing the Backstreet Boys together.
Oh boy.
I was like, okay. This is interesting.
You have my attention.
Yeah. And then it was X-Men new movies came out and I was cool. In Wolverine Rogue.
I've been told I love Wolverine.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes.
Like in the comics or like Hugh Jackman? That's a big difference.
I like to think like Hugh Jackman, but who knows what they actually
because, because the one in the comics is like small and hairy.
It could be either one then.
But yeah. Yeah, it was X-Men and oh my God, then I think the Lord of the Rings movies came out.
Oh wow.
And that was like my fandom. It was at that time you were either Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
I was Lord of the Rings all the way, baby.
Cool.
I still have not read all the Harry Potter books.
Yeah.
I've only seen the first movie. I'm a bad fan.
There's a really cool fan fiction, a Harry Potter fan fiction that is like,
mm-hmm.
it's called Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality. And it's written okay. by this guy. It's brilliant. This dude who wrote it,
mm-hmm.
His name's Eliezer Yudkowsky. And mm-hmm. he's like, I don't remember exactly his background, but he's one of like the pretty strongly founding members of this school of thought called rationalism that I think is very popular in like Silicon Valley, like technology communities. Mm-hmm. Anyways, this Harry Potter fanfic is straight up. It's like a manifesto or like an exposition of rationalist thought through the lens of the Harry Potter universe.
Okay.
And it's remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you will have to send me a link to that as well.
I absolutely will.
Because I try to put everything that we mention into like the show notes so people okay. can find it if they're interested.
Great. I'll link it.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, we shouldn't have. Why were we talking about me so much? This is all about. I'm going to cut most of that out because, you know. Because otherwise I just feel horrible.
Well, I feel like your viewership would enjoy knowing about you if they haven't had a chance to already.
Yeah, well, it's a long, long story is the problem. It's 20 years, like I told you, so it takes a while.